Serial Entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome back to the Serial Entrepreneur podcast, brought to you by Startups Magazine. As always, I am your host, Anna Flockett, and today I am joined by my lovely special guest, Amelia Sordell, founder of Clout, the personal branding agency. Amelia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
No, thank you. I'm so excited. You have such a kind of colourful portfolio. So I'm sure it will be an interesting and intriguing conversation. But before we kind of jump into that, I do have to ask you, as I ask everyone, probably the hardest question you will receive today. What is your favourite breakfast cereal and why?
Oh, what is my favourite breakfast cereal? It's so funny, you know, because every time you go on a podcast, you get sent kind of a couple of the questions beforehand. And this was the one question that, like, all the other ones were like so hard. And like, I'm just like, yeah, that's fine. I can deal with those, no problem. But this question was like, oh, what is my favourite cereal? Such a hard choice. I think probably cinnamon Graham's are like my favorite. They are throwback to the 90s, crunchy, but kind of soft and just like full of sugar. Like I just, or like anything that's really shouldn't be a cereal, like Fruit Loops too. But yeah, probably cinnamon Graham's. I'll go with that.
Yeah, definitely. I literally bought some cinnamon Graham's the other day and my husband was literally like, these are not a breakfast cereal. These are a sweet treat.
No, they're a cereal. Do not let him talk about that cereal like that.
I know. Something to get you through to Friday. Instead of drinking wine at 9 a.m., you can have lots of sugary cereal. Perfect. Well, I feel like now that kind of gives us a little glimpse of the real Amelia. And so now for people that may not have come across you before, I don't know where they've been hiding on LinkedIn if they haven't, but tell us a little bit about your kind of background and your journey into obviously marketing, and had you always wanted to work in marketing?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I did my degree. I didn't really want to go to university, which was probably the best place to start there. I didn't really want to go, but I think when I'm 31, right? So when I was 20, like going to university was like, I know it's only 10 years ago, but going to university was like the only path that pretty much anyone considered to getting into any kind of quote unquote good job, right? So I went to university because my parents wanted me to go. I didn't want to be there. So I did the thing that I thought I'd be quite good at, which was PR and applied communications. I hated every second of university. I wish I'd never gone, but you know, whatever. But what that university degree allowed me to do was to have the time to go and take internships during the summer. So the first summer I was at uni, I went to M&S Food and Flowers and Wine PR department. The next summer I was at Hillgate PR, which is a quite a big lifestyle PR agency. I then worked in Myla Lingerie, which is like the direct competitor to Agent Provocateur, and worked in their PR department. So I got to have the breathing room, I guess, to go and work in these incredible companies and just absorb everything that the directors of PR and founders were doing, and kind of learn about what the real world was like in terms of marketing and branding, like how do you market a new ice cream flavor? How do you tell people to come and buy this new ice cream flavor or these new sets of flowers or this weird like gherkin that M&S had like produced through like genetically modified. So it was quite an interesting thing. But then I left university and was like, actually, I don't want to be in PR, because if you work at a PR agency back then, you literally have to sell yourself to the devil. It was like, you were there from 8 a.m. in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. Every single night, you got paid 20 grand a year. You might get a promotion to 26 if you were lucky. And I just saw the people that were in that industry and I just thought, you know what, it's not for me. So I went into sales, into event sales. And pretty much all of that was marketing. It was, you know, marketing yourself. Even back then, it was almost personal branding. Like you had to go and connect and influence and meet all these people online and virtually and send them emails and take them to lunch just to get them to buy from you. We used to work with companies like NatWest and KPMG. So it was a lot of schmoozing and getting people to buy our services. And then I decided that I was unemployable and I hated working for other people and I wanted to go and start my own thing. And so I started my own business in 2013, which was a women's wear clothing brand. And the first year of business, we were like, when I say successful, like if we compared what most women's wear brands do in year one now compared to like what I did, you'd be blown away. Like we did incredibly well. We were stocked in 12 international boutiques. ASOS were courting us back then to like be one of their exclusive like partners. We were just doing phenomenally well. And of course, 21-year-old me, cocky as hell, didn't know a thing, made some really bad business decisions year two, and I lost everything. I lost the business, I lost my confidence, I lost, at the time, my relationship went as well. I had to move out the house I was living in and move back with my parents. Like, it was literally devastating. Everything. So you're going from the high of everyone being like, oh, this is the up and coming brand, and like being mentioned in the Daily Mail, and like everyone's like, oh, who's this woman? Like, she's creating this amazing product, to year two being literally like, mom and dad, I have no money. Can I come and live with you? So that was really, really hard. But I caught the bug for not just entrepreneurship, but marketing. And so the kind of my journey in marketing from there has always been, regardless of what role I was in, I would make it my own by marketing myself. So to get a job, because I needed money, I went and became a recruiter. I jumped on Google and said, what are the top 10 jobs you can do with no qualifications? Because no one wanted to employ an entrepreneur, right? People think that, you know, if you've been an entrepreneur once, like, oh, you know, you're not going to like authority, you know, your skills are going to be completely different to what we need. So I really struggled to find a job, and a recruitment agency gave me a shot, and I went in and applied all my marketing tactics that I'd done to grow my business to being a recruiter. And year one was their like rookie of the year. I absolutely smashed my target. I was billing the same as someone who'd been doing it for 3 or 4 years simply by sending email campaigns and actually listening to what customers wanted and like mirroring that. And so as a result of that, they promoted me to marketing manager because they were like, hey, if you can do it for yourself as a recruiter, come and do it for the company. So yeah.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh. Like, I don't even know where to begin to unpick on this story. So when your first business kind of fell to pieces in year two, first of all, kind of how did that happen, and what were the key lessons that you learned from that?
So how did it happen? So like, it's very complicated, but basically the way that B2B e-commerce works is you sell a collection, and you might have 4 collections or 6 collections or 20 collections a year, but you have a series of collections. And you go and sell those collections to your partners, the people that, you know, the retailers, right? Because we were the manufacturer. So, or we had a manufacturer, but we were the brand, and we were selling to, we had our own website too, but most of our business was through retail or e-commerce. And the way that works is when they place an order, which is typically 4 to 6 weeks prior to when that collection drops, they pay you 30% upfront. And then the rest of it's paid on delivery. And that's just pretty standard in the business, in the industry. It just means that the person that's creating the product gets a bit of money to go and like pay for the product to be made. And then they get their profits basically when it's delivered. So we made a really bad error in working with a business that we probably didn't do enough. Well, we definitely didn't do enough due diligence on. I just assumed in my naivety as someone who never really ran a business before, and I was 22 years old, that they were legit and they were good. You know, the only thing I did was look them up at company's house, and I was like, yep, they're a business, that's fine. So they placed like a £60,000 order with us, which was one of our biggest orders, if not the biggest. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like 60 grand with one company, like this is fantastic. So placed the order, they paid up front. And then between them placing the order and it being delivered, they like just ceased to exist and just disappeared. And so I was stuck with what essentially was 60 grand worth of retail cost product that I couldn't shift, because I had a website that had good traffic, but not enough to shift 60 grand worth of like 6 or 7 items. This was like hundreds and hundreds of items. It wasn't a few things. It was like literally my whole spare room. It was just their order, just like boxed up to the ceiling. And because it was, we got it delivered when the collection was meant to drop, I couldn't then try and sell it to other companies because they were like, we've already bought our collection for winter. We've already bought our autumn stuff, so we don't need any more product. And so we tried to shift it on the website and it wouldn't happen. And ultimately it was that thing that ate up all of our cash flow. So we got to a point where it was like, do I take out a loan against the business? Or at that time I had to personally guarantee it. So do I take out a personal guarantee loan where if I can't afford to pay it, they come after everything I have, which at that point wasn't like, I hadn't bought a house yet, but I was saving for it. So there was a decent amount of money that they could have taken from me. Or do I go and try and get investment to get me out of this hole? And if I do, how do I prove that I'm going to be profitable? or three shut down and move on and et cetera. And ultimately I decided to shut the business because I think I took it so personally that this company had done this to us. Like I was like, they've done this to me kind of thing, as opposed to actually they probably had shit going on in their company as well. And just, we weren't privy to it. So now I'm older and I look back at it, I'm like, yeah, it probably happened for the best, but yeah, it was devastating. And I think lessons from that is do your due diligence on who you're working with. Like I would never work with a company now that we didn't know who they were, what, you know, what their cash flow has been for the last, like we look every client that we work up with on Companies House or any in the country that they're registered in, and we do our due diligence. We're like, are they in profit? Have they got VC funding? Like, what's their product? Who knows about them? What's their brand already look like? And actually in my business model, we have what we call a 30-day brand accelerator, which is basically, for context, I run a personal branding agency, right? Just for anyone who's like, what is she talking about? So for the first 30 days when we work with clients, it's a 30-day contract where we go, right, we're going to do this for 30 days. And at the end of it, we're going to measure you against our key metrics of success. And if you fail, I'm sorry, we can't work with you. And it just means that we get money up front so we can start doing our work. But it also means we can try that client before we actually decide long term we're going to work with them, which mitigates our risk. And also means that we only get to work with people that are actually going to be really good at it, good at personal branding and really successful. But also the client then gets to test us and see if we're for them, because what we do is very, very intimate. We need to know our clients on such a deep level. So to have that intimacy, you have to trust one another, and you can't trust one another if you don't like one another. So the things that I learned from that business failing has ultimately allowed my business to win as I have now.
Yeah. And I am a big believer of everything happens for a reason. And so, you know, that happened to you back then, which probably seemed like the worst thing ever. But now look where you are now. And like you say, it's led to other successes. We haven't actually touched, like nearly halfway into the conversation, we haven't actually touched on Clout yet, which is obviously insane. So yeah, you started Clout in 2020. Was it last summer, I believe?
Yeah, August last year, like middle of the pandemic, I quit my safe job and was like, bye guys, I'm going to go start a business with £1,500 in my bank account, my mortgage due tomorrow. Like, bye. And they all thought I was nuts, but like really supported me. I'm very, very blessed that my previous employer was just awesome. And to this day, like I'm in touch with him and really good friends with him. And he's always checking in and like mentoring me and being like, oh, because he's quite a successful business person. So it's really good to have that relationship where I can still learn from him. But yeah, I quit my job middle of the pandemic. I've always, since I closed Either Side, which was the business, I've had that itch. Like it's not gone. And every kind of 3 months, I'm like, right, I need like, what about that? Oh, I could do that so much better. Like, and it's just... And anyone who's an entrepreneur can relate to that. It's just a bug. It's like a disease almost. It's just constant in your brain. Like, oh, I wonder if we could do it like that. Or we could do that. Oh, I could definitely market that better. And your brain is just always thinking about business and how you can scale stuff and grow stuff and how you could make things better. And it got to a point where when I got hired by my previous employer, they actually found me through LinkedIn because I'd built such a strong personal brand as a recruitment marketer, like in building recruitment agency brands. As they headhunted me from the company I was working from, and they found me on LinkedIn through a piece of content that I created about recruitment marketing. And I went there as kind of a head of people role. So I was in charge of like employee engagement, which meant that, again, like teaching everyone how to build out their personal brands and building up personal brand for me to attract people to come and work for the, it was a venture capital business. And, as on that road of like continually creating content around what I was talking about, I all of a sudden had all these people DMing me being like, how did you get 15,000 followers on LinkedIn? How did you make that post go viral about Culture Fit? Like teach us how you do it. And so I started going, okay, well, instead of me answering all these messages individually, because I got them daily, I was like, I'm just going to post about it. And then hopefully that will help some people. Like I didn't do it being like, oh, I can make money out of this. It was really simply, I cannot be asked to go back to all these messages. So I'm just going to tell people at scale how I did it. So I started sharing stuff like, you know, I've gone from 1500 to 15,000 followers in 1 year. Here's how I did it. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And that would just go boom. Like 500 people would be like, react to it and be like, this is amazing. Like, tell us more about this. And I was like, oh, okay. So people are interested in this. And it just kind of perpetuated from there to a point where the company that I was working for, we opened another business that offered the services that I was giving out for free, because they were like, we have to monetize this. Like, you're getting so much of it. People asked me to come do workshops with their company and all this kind of stuff. And so obviously the entrepreneur brain went, why am I not charging people for this? Like this, I could be making, like my company that I'm working for is making $2,000 a pop when I go and do these workshops. What am I making? I'm making like $40,000 a year. What am I doing? Like I need to be charging for this, right? So that was kind of the basis of clout was I built my personal brand and I now do it for other people. And I think actually some of the best businesses in the world are problems that either the founder had or that the founder saw and was like, I can fix this. I can make this better. And it's very organic. It's not like I went to business school and like what business opportunities, what markets need help. Like it's very organic. And it was definitely true for me.
Yeah, definitely. I always say a good startup business is born from solving a problem or, you know, fixing a solution that's happening to you personally. If you're going through it and you need a solution, then chances are someone else is. And that was obviously the case. You're the perfect example of that. And it obviously has been such a success for you. I mean, like you said at the beginning, growing, well, starting a business in the middle of a pandemic and being just over a year old now, and you guys have like such success. It's kind of blown up and, you know, it's amazing. So obviously we've touched on it and how you kind of founded it. So what is, I know obviously you're a personal branding agency and you focus on people's personal brand rather than a company brand, but what is the goal and the vision with Clout? What sort of services do you offer? What do you do with people?
So we attack personal brands in a very similar way to like a social media agency or a digital PR agency would attack a company brand. So our services are very similar. We come in, you pay us a retainer, and we blow you up on every channel we can possibly blow you up on. And that could be, you know, LinkedIn. It could be that we get you on podcasts. It could be that we launch your podcast. Like we have a client whose podcast we've launched and he's done phenomenally well. He had a sponsor like episode 5, like really, really well, just because he's got such influence on other platforms now that people naturally want to come and hear him speak and interview people. You know, Twitter again, Instagram, YouTube, like you name it. We're the agency that will do it for you, but it's for individuals, not for company brands, which might sound counterproductive to people because they're like, oh, well, if I'm trying to market my company brand, why am I doing it with myself? But it's because individuals have 10 times the reach of a company brand online. So if you're a founder of a business, you are a brand in itself. You need to be promoting yourself as the leader of that business. You need to be doing podcasts like this, going and being quoted in Harvard Business Review or any of your trade press. Like you need to be known as the expert in your space everywhere, so that when people Google the problem that you can solve, you're the number one person that comes up. Or when people come across LinkedIn and they see a how-to guide that you've shared, they go, oh, never knew that. I'm going to follow that person because they're really interesting. And they will stay in your network until they are ready to buy or they are ready to join your business, because we work with FTSE businesses on employer branding strategies as personal branding. So building out the CEO and the CMO and the CFO to be like the leaders that you want to work for. And the results that we've had with that have been phenomenal as well. But the vision for the business, to your point, I want to be like, you know, you think of Coca-Cola, you think of soda, right? They're synonymous. You think of apples. I'm sorry. You think of laptops. You think of Apple. You think of cell phones. You think of iPhone. I want people to think of Clout when they think personal branding. I want to own that space. That's the vision. That's the vision internally for the business, is I want to be the space. I want to own the category, the end. Like no one has even a sniff of us. We have all of it, whether it's an agency or product. Like there are so many things that I want to do. I kind of see Clout as a bit of a department store, and each floor has got its own thing. Like the agency might be one floor, the podcast might be the next one. The floor above that might be a product that we roll out as a tech product that people can, like, it's really easy for them to create content. And then the kind of external vision for the business. So when it comes to speaking about customers and stuff, is I just really want people to understand that people buy from people. Like, it doesn't, and I've had so many people come back to me being like, well, that's not true, is it? They actually buy on price. I'm like, yeah, they do. People are always going to buy on price. You always have economic buyers. But if you want user buyers who are brand loyal, who want to advocate for you, who will be your marketing soldiers, you need to sell as a person. You need to be the face of that brand. Give people a reason to buy into your business. It is not a surprise that Gymshark is Ben Francis, that Virgin is Richard Branson, that Spanx is Sarah Blakely, that, you know, all Adele is Michael Dell. If you go and look at any of these people online, they have triple, quadruple, sometimes 10 times the followers than the company brand does. And that's because people buy from people, but more particularly they buy from people they trust. And that's what Clout does, is helps people build trust at scale.
I think it's really interesting what you say is people buy from people, and this doesn't kind of align with the point you were exactly making, I don't think. But like when you were describing that people buy from people, all I could think of was Instagram influencers. So all these fashion brands now, you don't necessarily know the people behind the founders, but you know them with like Molly May is Pretty Little Thing and et cetera, et cetera. So they get people in to be the face of their brand. And again, it's people, isn't it, rather than the actual company.
It's a very similar concept, but actually with your point about Pretty Little Thing, I would say Umar Kamani's got a really big brand. I would say that Ben Francis has got a really big brand. I would say that the guy that founded I Saw It First, really big brand. Connor Walker, House of CB, brand. Like the younger founders understand the importance of this. Stephen Bartlett, Dominic McGregor, all these, like anyone that's under 35 can see what's happened with the world. Influencer marketing's taken off. Social media is the future of e-commerce. So if you want to have any kind of influence with your brand, you aside, you have to put yourself out there. It's really difficult now to cut through the noise because, let's be honest, the digital landscape has completely flattened the world. It is so saturated now and anyone can make it, which means that it's much harder to make it, right? So if you can set yourself apart because you're the Connor Walker and everyone loves Connor. Everyone wants to support Connor. They love Connor. They buy into her lifestyle. I want that Jeep Wrangler and living in LA. Cool. I'm going to go and buy that House of CB dress that costs 150 quid. So it's part of selling your company, basically. And also becoming an employer of choice, because let's be honest, if you're a startup, employees matter. Well, company, period. Employees matter, right? People matter. And I'll tell you this, it's been so easy for me to hire because all the people that I've hired were already following me. So when I reached out to them and said, hey, are you interested in having a chat? They're like, yep, cool. Where do I sign? Like they don't even want to interview because they've been following me for a year and they're bought into the vision. They're bought into what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more.
Want to hear some career tales from amazing creatives worldwide trying to change the world? Then head over to the I Like Networking podcast. I Like Networking is a mentoring and networking platform dedicated to supporting women and non-binary people in the creative industries. Expect honest chats about getting your foot in the door, failures and tips to nail your creative career. You can find them by searching I Like Networking into any streaming service or by going to ilikenetworking.uk.
You also obviously said it's maybe more of a younger generation thing, and working in the startup entrepreneurial world, I do come across some people that say, no, I don't want to associate myself with my company. Like I want it to be quite a separate thing. Are there any kind of like negatives or connotations to having your brand being associated with your business?
So I've been very intentional about separating my brand from my company brand. So Clout's brand is very specific, different tone of voice, different content goes out in the company brand, brand guidelines, etc. Aesthetics are Clout's, right? Amelia's brand is completely separate. I more often than not don't use the company brand guidelines. I have my own brand guidelines that are going to be synonymous with my website that's going to be launched soon, because I'm really conscious that Amelia Sordell isn't scalable to infinite, unless you're Tony Robbins, right? He's like a billionaire, but there's not that many Tonys in the world. But my Amelia Sordell is not scalable to infinite, right? But Clout is scalable to infinite. I could be completely indispensable from that business and that business will still stand up as the experts in personal branding. And that's what I want it to be. I want it to be different. I want Amelia Sordell to be the founder of Clout as opposed to Clout being Amelia Sordell. And I think when you do that as a business owner or a founder, you're then into like really serious business, because your business could then be acquired, or it could float, or it could be, you could start acquiring other businesses and then you don't have to be a part of it. And that is a really attractive business to outside investment, et cetera. But at the same time, you're building authority. You're becoming known as the person in that space, which I'm legacy planning by doing this for my future career. Like, I don't know what the future holds for Clout. I hope it's big things. But if I get to a point where we've got 50 team and, you know, doing 20 million a year, and I can go, cool, I'm going to hire a CEO so I can go off and help smaller agencies do this. How brilliant, because I've already built up an entire backstory that everyone knows who Amelia is. So I don't even have to try and find these businesses. They're going to come to me because they're going to want me to do what I did for Clout. So yeah.
So it's important having the two brands, but they don't necessarily have to be synonymous with each other.
No, if anything, I would say that you have to be a founder in your own right. and then your business has to stand. Like, personal branding doesn't replace company branding. I always think of, unless you're like a freelancer or a consultant, you are a really small business with a small budget. You can probably do it up to like 20 heads. You could probably do it. But my opinion anyway is it's very hard to scale it above that if you are the business, right? But if you can consider it in the sort of analogy of a really good tennis player might have a strong forearm, right? And they're going to get that back of up, but they might miss all the backhands, right? But if you have a good forehand and a backhand, you're unbeatable. So that's kind of the same thing with personal branding. If your personal brand is your forehand and your company is your backhand, like you're game over because everyone else is playing with only one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've never really thought about it like this. Now it just seems so simple and so effective, like you say. With personal branding, you mentioned, I think you mentioned it in our conversation and I was reading about it on Cloud's website as well. You said it's often really misunderstood and it kind of gets a bad reputation. Why do you think that is? Why don't people understand the importance of personal branding at the moment?
Because people think that because it's called personal branding, people think it's an ego-driven activity. And because people are so worried about what other people think of them, they go, no, I don't want to be seen as an egomaniac, so I'm not going to do it. The issue with that is it's not an ego-driven activity. It's actually a strategic imperative if you want to get a competitive edge over your competition. And so I have no, like, you ask anyone, I have no ego when it comes to my personal brand. Like, if my post gets 4 likes, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Like, or if I have people who are like, no, I don't agree with you, I'm like, cool, let's go. Let's have a discussion about it. And actually, I appreciate that takes time to build, right? I didn't get that overnight, but I definitely went into it knowing that this was going to be the future of branding. The future of branding is personal. It's why influencers exist. It's why social media exists. It's why social media will be the new commerce, right? People buy from people. So I had to park my ego and my worry about what other people were going to think of me and go, you know what? I'm going to do this and I'm going to be the best in my space because I do it. Not because I stand behind everyone else. And let's be honest, you have to be famous for something to be known as the expert in your space, right? It's really hard to be famous for anything if you don't actually stick your head above the parapet and make some noise. And if you look at any of the really strong personal brands, I would challenge you to find anyone, and with credibility, by the way, not like these influencers who've bought 1 million followers and their engagement's rubbish and they're not actually saying anything of any kind of substance. But people who actually have done the graft and are sharing their thoughts and their opinions, like, you know, giving away free tips. Connor's a great example. She gives away so much free advice, Connor Walker, on how to build and scale a direct-to-consumer business. People like that, they're winning. And why do they win? Because they're personal. Gary Vee, guy's worth like, what, $200 million? The whole brand is built off him.
Yeah. And some people like that, they're not always going to be liked. And I think maybe that's the secret as well. Like you said about being egotistical, people are worried about what you say people think of them. They don't want to be disliked by one person, even if it means 100 people are going to love them.
This is the thing that really, like, really bugs me. And it's emotional, right? So it's not there's not a silver bullet to help people overcome that fear. It we all have it. And it stems back from, you know, the Stone Ages and being cavemen and women, where if we were shut, if we pissed the tribe off, we might get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. So like we can't piss the tribe off. We have to go with whatever the mass wants to do, right? But unfortunately, we've not evolved. So we still have that millionaire-year-old brain telling us, oh no, we can't say that. We can't say that at the dinner table because people are going to roll their eyes and they're going to think I'm a bit of an idiot. No, screw that. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And, you know, some people might not like it, but the beauty of having an opinion and the beauty of having a personality and being willing to stand behind your personality and behind who you really are, provided you've got a good heart, which is most of us do, is that it will repel the people that you shouldn't be in your space. It will repel the people that don't like you and you don't like. Brilliant. I don't even have to deal with them. But even better, it will attract the people that I do like and that I do want to work with and that want to work with me. And when you can get your head around that of like, yeah, I'm going to piss some people off, but actually this is a really cool tool. It's like a filter. I get rid of all the people I don't want to work with. They're just gone. Don't have to deal with them. And I'm just getting all these people that want to work with me and give me their money and be in my space. They're just attracted to you. And to me as a businesswoman, I'm like, yeah, done. That's easy, easy, easy win.
Definitely. You obviously talk about growing your network and your socials and that. One of my questions was going to be, you know, how do you do that? But I feel like that's kind of like probably a sit-down workshop that you put, people pay you to tell them. So what I kind of meant with that is maybe I'll elaborate on that more. We know that you've absolutely smashed LinkedIn. Like, that was kind of like one of the starting points for you starting Clout. Is it harder to grow on certain platforms? And have you, obviously, besides LinkedIn, the obvious one, have you had more success on others? And why are certain platforms easier than others to grow on?
Yeah, so I kind of view social media as different languages. So I'm going to say hi in a different language on Instagram than I would say hi in a different, like, on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn might be French, Instagram's Japanese, Twitter's English, like whatever. You've got to learn the language of each platform in order for it to do well. However, I think people focus too heavily on the number, right? You know, I've got 65,000 odd followers on LinkedIn, which it sounds great, but I was getting inbound inquiries when I had 8. So I think people really worry a lot about how many followers they have and not enough about the followers they do have. So for example, I've got 2,500 on Instagram, but I get inbound inquiries on there every single day. So I'm making money from that. And I only have two. I'm not even a micro. I'm like a dot compared to some of my, like, our Instagram person's got 15,000 followers and she just chucks up a post every now and again and it goes boom. And I'm like, how have you done this? Like, I have no idea. But the people that follow me are really bought into my journey and what I'm trying to achieve. So we always make money from it because the people that are following me are the right people. And that's what personal branding does. It, instead of you just whacking up a picture of you in a gym outfit, you know, looking cute as most people do on Instagram, I'm doing it to add value to people and also to give people who follow me on other platforms a bit more of a peek into my life. So come and speak to me in Japanese and we'll go through that kind of culture, that sort of difference of nuance of who I am. And I've got kids and I share more about my private life and it's kind of like another page in my book that enables people to want to follow me on all channels because I'm different on every channel. There's a different layer that you come across me on every channel. And I think everyone needs to bear that in mind. You can't grow on Instagram and apply that same strategy to LinkedIn because it won't work. It's a different language. It's like going to Japan, no one speaks English and you're trying to talk to them. No one's going to understand what you're saying. However, LinkedIn is harder now to grow than it was before. Because people are now doing this. So if you want to build your personal brand and your LinkedIn is your place where your audience are, you've got to start now because you will be left behind. Like, people are really starting to notice that this is a good way of generating interest in business. Instagram is obviously harder. It's a pay-to-play platform. You know, it's pretty much you have to sponsor stuff if you want to reach new networks. Although I've noticed recently that hashtags have come back up again. Like, there was a period where hashtags didn't really have a huge... They've always had a big impact, but not as big of an impact as they had previously. But now we're seeing half my impressions now come from hashtags, which is awesome. So I think knowing which hashtags to use on Instagram, but also what type of content works on Instagram. So every platform will have an update, a big update every 3 months or so, right? It's just one of those things. And every 10 days, normally there is something that's updated, but every 3 months there's a big update. And at the moment, Reels is what's being pushed on Instagram, right? So we know that. So we're like, cool. All the content we'll do will be Reels. And just leveraging that knowledge is really, really helpful to growing a channel. Like LinkedIn, for example, polls right now are going off the chain. So all of our clients and myself are doing loads of polls. Like, just get those views in. Get as many. Like, we had a poll last week that did like a million views. It's nuts, like crazy. And that client has like, what, 6,000 followers or something? A million views on a 6,000 follower account. Yeah, it's crazy. So understanding what works is really important. TikTok, for example, super easy to go viral if you understand the nuance, the language of that platform, i.e. jump on trends. And by the way, you don't have to sit there dancing in your bedroom to jump on the trend. You just use the music and then add the value that you want to add, which is what I do. We had a job ad on TikTok go viral. I posted a job ad being like, hi guys, I'm looking for a graphic designer. Here's what you need to know if you want to work for us. And like literally did like a little like ring around. We got 40,000 views and 400 plus applications. Show me another person that gets that from a job ad. Doesn't happen. So it's, knowing what platform you should be on is the most important thing. But then learning as well, like what is actually working, just test. Diversity of content is where you'll learn how to grow because you'll go, oh, that's really weird. My static post on Instagram only got 300 likes, but my reel got 1,000. Why has that happened? You do more reels. See if that hypothesis works out. And then you can start what we call skyscrapering. You just go on top of it, 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 and something until something else, it peaks and there's nothing else more you can do with it. And then you move on to the next thing.
You obviously said different platforms work for different people and for different reasons, like you say, knowing the languages. Is there a platform that you would recommend for people who are starting out? Like if they were going to focus on one maybe to start with, would you say LinkedIn's more powerful for building your personal brand or Instagram, or if you were going to concentrate on one to start with?
It's entirely dependent on your audience. Entire like audience led always. Like I always say to people, you would never go to a party if none of your friends were there, would you? You'd go to the party that where all your mates were going. So you need to go to the party where all your friends are, where all your customers are. So if your customers are in tech, they're probably on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you're B2B, they're probably on LinkedIn. If they are Gen Z makeup fans, they're probably on TikTok and Instagram. Like you need to understand fundamentally who your audience is and where they go to get their information, to get their dopamine hit, if you like. And then you start there. Because that, and by the way, when I say ideal customer, I don't mean literally your customer. It might be literally your customer. For me, it's literally my customer. But if you're trying to do this from a perspective, I need investment. Okay, so where's your investors? If you're doing this from an employer branding perspective, you think, geez, I'm trying really hard here to hire people and no one's a good fit for us. Where are the candidates you want to hire? Are they on Reddit? Are they reading Medium? Do you need to start posting blogs on Medium or get a ghostwriter to do it for you? Do you need to go and do a podcast? Like where is your home? Where is your audience's space? And that's where you start. And I know that's not a silver bullet answer because I bet you'd ask 100 other marketing people that and they'd go, I think Instagram's the best because of this. And I'm like, no, that's bollocks. You need to go where your audience are. The end. Because otherwise it's a total waste of time. I don't want to be at a party where none of my friends are. I want to be where everyone else is.
Yeah. One thing I have picked up on is that you haven't mentioned Facebook in this conversation at all. Is that one that's just not for you? Or in your opinion, is that kind of a platform that is not much use at all anymore?
Facebook has a place. Facebook has a place, in my opinion, for product-driven businesses who want to shift it fast or service, like D2C service-based businesses that want to shift, like, you know, insurance companies or, you know, a finance brokers, that kind of stuff. Like that, it's great because you just chuck a bunch of money in, you get your audience segmentation right, you do a few churns of, you know, top of funnel, middle funnel, end of funnel, you'll pop out some stuff and probably won't cost you very much money. The trouble with Facebook is what personal branding is about is organic reach. It's organic influence. It's building trust. Paying for that, to me, is counterproductive, okay? And Facebook has a sub 0.6% organic reach on any given post. So if you have 10,000 followers or likes or connections or friends or whatever they're called on Facebook, you will only reach 0.6% of them when you post. If I post on LinkedIn, I can reach over 100 times my follower count. So Facebook is not redundant. It's right for some people. And hey, if your audience is over 65 and you know they are really interested in, I don't know, collecting gin or something, then maybe Facebook is bang on the money for you. But for me and my company and my clients so far, Facebook's not really been a consideration for us. And actually, I personally wouldn't have it if I didn't need Instagram, because as a business holder, you have to have a Facebook business account to have an Instagram page.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very annoying.
I bet. Yeah, I think that's the case for a lot of people and a lot of conversations I've had with people, not necessarily in the personal branding space. Obviously, we know clout's gonna own that, but like in the branding and marketing space, people don't talk about Facebook as much anymore. So yeah.
It is still relevant though. I don't completely dismiss it because it is the biggest social media platform in the world. Like let's not forget that. It is the biggest, most active social media platform in the world, right? But it peaked about 3 years ago, and its signups have been declining year on year on year on year on year, and the average age groups are older and older and older. So people that joined the platform when they were 16 might still be there, but they're not the same. They might not be your audience. So you just have to. It goes back to my point about know where your audience are and just be there. If they're on Facebook because you're a coach. Coaches do great on Facebook because that their target audience might be there, but businesses like mine, the CEO of Sky Bet is not going to be on Facebook. He's going to be on LinkedIn.
No, definitely not. I am super conscious of time. I could sit here and ask you a million other questions because I'm so invested now. But I think I'll finish on one, which is a two-part question because it's about the two brands. So what is next for Clout and what is next? I know you've already briefly touched on your website, but what is next for Amelia Sordell?
What is next for Clout? So I want Clout, as I said, to own personal branding. I don't want any other agencies to even get a sniff. There's already other companies that are trying to do what we do. There are some companies that did what we did first or do what we do first. But in my opinion, of course, humble opinion, they're not doing what we do and how we do it. And I know that because I quite often get them their CEOs coming and trolling on my posts and stuff. So I'm quite honestly, I'm feeling a bit threatened that you've got to come and give me a bit of a jab. That's cool, baby. It's all engagement. As I said, no ego about it. You come give me all your engagement. So for Clout, I think the next step for us is I want to be the company that you come to us and we go make you go boom everywhere. So I want to have a handle we're deep in LinkedIn, we're deep in podcasts, we're deep in Instagram. I want to be deep in TikTok, in Reddit, in Medium, in YouTube. I want to have the best of the best people working in my business who can literally take one person and blow them up on every single channel, if need be. It might not be the right strategy, but if it is, we can. And aside from that, doing digital PR too. I also want to be able to PR the hell out of my clients, get them doing stuff like this, get them, you know, in Forbes and Harvard Business Review and Business Insider, going and get them on speaking and in in-house keynotes. How can we get you to become a TED talk? That's what I want to build the next Elon Musk's, the next Mark Zuckerberg's, the next, you know, Richard Branson, Sarah Blakely's, Connor Walker's. I want Clout to be that business. And next for Amelia Sordell, God, who knows? I'm just loving the journey, to be honest. I'm very much, so I have a saying that I've slightly stolen from Serena Kerrigan. If anyone follows her, she's amazing. If you're a woman or a guy and you want some serious confidence boosting, go and follow her on Instagram. She's phenomenal. She's got a thing called Let's Fucking Date. Brilliant. Please go and follow her. I know you're going to laugh at that name, but she's honestly a fantastic person. Anyway, she always says, do it for the plot. So my mantra in life is do it for the plot, not the ending. So for me, everything that I'm doing between now and even 3 years' time is for the plot. I'm like, right, what's the next thing I can do that's going to scare the hell out of me? Right, I'm going to go and do a keynote. So I did a keynote last week, in person. Right, what's the next thing I can do that's going to scare the hell out of me? Right, I'm going to go and, I don't know, try and get venture capital or whatever it might be. But I'm constantly trying to just elevate where I'm at because there is nothing worse than standing still, right? Nothing worse than feeling like you've plateaued. But future, I would love to be in a position where Clout is doing not loads of money, but a decent, enough money that I could be comfortable and that our team are compensated fairly and get bonuses and all that stuff. And that where, you know, if we have any shareholders, they're getting a decent amount and hire a CEO to come and run the thing for me or with me and go off and do what I do best, which is help people. I wish I'd had me when I was 21 because Amelia now would have been like, don't do that. You're dumb. Don't do that. And I want to do that for other startups. I want to help them grow. Because that's really rewarding for me. And it's not just my business. Obviously, I love it. I look back and I'm like, oh, wow, we've done relatively well in the last 12 months. But it's much more rewarding to do it for your team or for other people. I've done some pro bono, mentoring with a couple of smaller businesses. And the growth they've had in the 12 months we've been speaking has been wild. And it makes me so proud of them. And so excited to be a part of that. And I want to do that. If that was my job full time, dream job.
Yeah. We said at the beginning, successful businesses are built when you're fixing a problem or solving a solution that you've been through yourself. I also think some of the most successful businesses are when you're thinking of helping other people and that's one of your main goals. And that obviously clearly that's where you started out helping people on LinkedIn. Hey, I could do this for a business, helping people.
Yeah, literally all I do is we help people. We just, that's it, right? I was once told that if you want to make money, you have to either help people or help people make money.
Perfect. What a perfect ending. Honestly, like I say, I could chat to you all day, but you've been one of my favorite guests ever. So thank you so much. And I feel so empowered and educated coming away from this chat. So thank you so much, Amelia.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a total blast. I love doing these and I appreciate the invite.
Serial Entrepreneur.